Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, the unscripted show that celebrates unsung heroes, myth busts historical lies, and rediscovers the forgotten stories that changed our world. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Hey everyone, welcome to one of those in-between episodes where I answer any question you have. Today's question is this. Is there any language in use today that could be understood 1,000 years ago? Very interesting question. Languages, as you know, evolve, and you can say that they more or less evolve and change according to how fluid the culture is, how much people come and go, and as they come in, they bring new languages, and more importantly, terminology with them. For example, when I lived in Turkey, if you wanted to describe an elastic bandage, you would just say, elastic bandage. Of course, that's taken directly from English. If we talk about English itself, how far can you go back when you still understand it? The point is around the time of Shakespeare, and that's no accident because Shakespeare coined hundreds of words in the English language. Of course, if you read something from Victorian times like Charles Dickens or Mark Twain, there's no problems. You can still understand things pretty well from Shakespeare's time in the 1600s, John Milton, who wrote Paradise Lost in 1667, Benjamin Franklin in the 1700s. When you get into the 1500s, like Thomas More's Utopia, then you start to get into trouble. Things get really difficult when you go back into the 1400s, such as Geoffrey Chaucer's The Canterbury Tales. The foreignness only increases when you get into the 1300s. And by the time you go back to Beowulf, this is before the Norman invasion, when the English language is far, far more Germanic and similar to Old Norse or Danish or German than our common language today. But in terms of languages that haven't changed, one good candidate I would say is Icelandic. Because of Iceland's geographic location, it was isolated for a very long period of time and had minimal direct contact with other languages. Icelandic people have said that they can read and comprehend Icelandic sagas with comfort. That's like somebody saying that they could pick up Shakespeare, and to them it's as normal as what they'd read in a newspaper or on their social media feed. And these Icelandic sagas, many of them are twice as old as Shakespeare and still easily comprehensible. And Iceland is, of course, relatively sparsely populated. There's only 200,000 to 300,000 people there. So regional dialects haven't really developed in the same way in other languages because there's such a small data set. Now, I'd like to spend a good amount of time talking about not only how language can change due to influx of new populations, but also due to conscious decisions because of politics. And I can think of no greater example than the Turkish language. The story of the Turkish language reform is absolutely mind-boggling. And I have personal experience with this because I learned to read and speak and write in modern Turkish. But as a historian of the Middle East, I also had to understand Ottoman Turkish, which the difference between the two is that the government made a language reform in the 1920s, and the difference was so vast and drastic that Turkish people today cannot read Turkish from the 1920s without translation. So here's the background. The Ottoman Empire came to an end in 1922, but Ottoman Turkish as a language is the only one that comes close to English in the vastness of its vocabulary. This comes from Geoffrey Lewis, who wrote one of the most important grammar books on Turkish. So at its heart, Ottoman Turkish was Turkish, that is in its syntax, but about 40% of it was Persian and Arabic. The reason was that Ottomans had borrowed several features of those languages. The Turks originated in what is now Outer Mongolia, but in the 8th century, they were defeated by their Mongolian neighbors, and they left their home and began to migrate toward the south and the west. By the 11th century, many of them who had reached the Middle East became Muslim, and the literate amongst them adopted the Arabic alphabet. Their own language, Turkish, had a lot of words for horses, camels, and other things for nomadic life, but they didn't have terms for theology and philosophy and art, so they just borrowed them straight up from Persian and Arabic. But Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the founder of the Turkish Republic, was the one who cleansed the language. In 1928, he brought about the change of the alphabet from Arabo-Persian to Latin, So the entire alphabet was changed in a period of 6 months from an Arabic alphabet to a Latin alphabet that you use in English speaker. It'd be like if a reformer came to America and decided, we need to modernize the alphabet. Let's stop using the Latin characters and use Chinese characters instead. Lo and behold, now everyone is illiterate. Well, in the 1920s in Turkey, most of society still was illiterate, so it wasn't as drastic as you might think. But anyway, Atatürk wrote a short preface to a book on the history and potential of the Turkish language, and he included these words. The Turkish nation, which knows how to protect its territory and its sublime independence, must also liberate its language from the yoke of foreign languages. The problem was that thousands of words had to be invented for Turkish that were deemed to be purely Turkish and not Arabic or Persian. Some of them were made up with the logic of an ancient Turkish word from 1,000 years ago. Others were complete nonsense. But for the most part, the language did succeed. It was simplified, and it was made far easier for a common person to learn. The ancient language was very difficult, and journalists and other people realized that in order to build up a mass readership and for education reformers who wanted to make school books that young children could read, the old language was just very hard to work with. So that's why a lot of these reforms took place. Well, what that means today is most Turks below the age of 65 are cut off from the writings of the 1920s and 1930s, which was a great period of their modern literature. Here was an extract from a reader's letter to the newspaper Cumhuriyet in 1995, and this shows you just the astonishing nature of how languages can change. He said, I was looking for one of Yakup Kadri's books. He was a famous man of letters back in the early 20th century. So the writer says, it was nowhere to be found. I asked the publisher, who had reprinted many of his books into modern Turkish, why he hadn't reprinted that one. He replied, we haven't been able to find anyone to put it into Turkish. Apparently, a book printed in the 1930s, which I read as a schoolboy, today has to be put into Turkish. Did Yakup Kadri write in Chinese, I wonder? So as you can see, the nature of how languages can change, sometimes it's by natural evolution, other times it's by conscious design. All that to say, if you are Icelandic, be glad that you have a direct connection to your ancestors. Well, thanks for the question. If you would like to submit one to me, you can go to historyunpluggedpodcast.com. There you'll find the instructions, and I look forward to any question you have. Thanks for listening to the History Unplugged podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get your daily dose of all things history-related, from ancient Greece to the Cold War. You can do that by going to historyonthenet.com/subscribe. Speaking of History on the Net, if you want to dive deeper, go to our site historyonthenet.com, and there you'll find blog posts, book reviews, and all of our other podcast episodes. Plus, don't forget to rate and review this podcast so we can bring you the best daily history content possible. We'll see you next time at the History Unplugged podcast.